When we were well enough to travel, Emma took the train to Colorado to spend the rest of the summer with her mother, and I returned to Battle Creek to see to the printing of my new book. It wasn't until December that I was able to go south again, but Emma was still too frail to make the trip. It was a long, lonesome time without her, but I busied myself with a new venture.
We're now 110 miles up the Yazoo River, Elder White. That's Yazoo City, Mississippi, just ahead.
It's been an exhilarating trip, Captain Orton. Will we be able to pull right up to the city wharf?
I've got Brother Parker up in the bow with the lead line. How's the damn duff rod, Parker?
One full fathom, sir. There's plenty of water, Captain. You can pull right up to the landing.
All right. At 1/3, Mr. Claus. Is this your ghost? Easy now.
All right, Parker. Take two men. Make ready the gangway.
Back her off full throttle and shut her down, Mr. Claus.
Aye, Captain. Team off. Paddle wheel disconnected.
Gangplank down and secure, Captain.
Good job. Well, here we are at Bliss Landing, Elder White. And there's Mr. Bliss himself, about to come aboard. I understand he's the biggest plantation owner around these parts.
Fine. I'll go down to the bottom deck and welcome him aboard.
I'm honored to meet you, Reverend White. I heard y'all was on your way about 3 days ago.
The honor is mine, Mr. Bliss. We made slow time the last 25 miles because of a broken drive chain. I'm afraid we're stuck here until another one arrives from Chicago.
Well, that's fine with me, sir. Yazoo City ain't much of a town, and the nearest church is more than 10 miles away, so folks hereabout ain't heard much preaching for the last 15 years. I hope y'all will hold a prayer meeting next Sunday.
We are Seventh-day Adventists, sir. But I will be happy to hold a meeting on Sunday next, if that's what you wish.
Oh, that'll be fine, mighty fine, sir. And there's a lot of folks around these parts that will attend.
Then it's settled. 1 o'clock on Sunday in the Morning Star's chapel. Unknown to me, our colored cook, Albert Green, had heard my conversation with Mr. Bliss. He left the Star and set out to invite all the colored people he could find to the scheduled church meeting. When time came for the Sunday service, I was amazed at the number of people of both races who walked up the gangplank. No religious meeting of any kind that included both white and colored people had ever been held in Mississippi since before the Civil War. I feared that I was in some trouble.
Reverend White, what is the meaning of this? I thought this meeting was to be for white people only, sir.
Mr. Bliss, I am as surprised as you are. It seems that the boat's cook invited the color people who live around here to come to the preaching.
Well, what are you going to do about it?
Well, there's nothing I can do about it. The colored people must be allowed to stay. I only hope my decision won't cause any friction.
Well, as long as they're here, I guess they can stay. After all, I've known most of these folks all my life. But the white people ain't gonna sit with them. Y'all can bet on that.
I have an idea, Mr. Bliss, that just might accommodate both parties. I have a long curtain that I can hang right down the middle of the chapel. White people on one side, colored people on the other. You won't be sitting together, and I will be able to address both sides at the same time. I believe that was the first integrated church service in the South for many years back. The curtain was an affront to the colored people, of course. But it was something of a miracle that the two races would get together at all. The meetings went on like this for several months while we waited for our new drive chain to arrive. I was not partial to the dividing curtain, and I would have preferred to talk to the colored people alone so that I might reach them more directly with the third angel's message. But the two races were getting used to being in the same room, and when we finally got around to building a church in the area, a mixture of races would not seem so inconceivable.
Are you Ensign White?
I am.
Well, I'm the deputy superintendent of the county schools, and I'm here to tell y'all, y'all gotta make a choice about which class you want to work with.
Oh? How so?
If y'all wants to teach the whites, we'll give you all the support y'all wants. We need book learning and preaching, and it don't matter to us which denomination y'all is from.
That's fine with us.
But y'all will have to quit teaching the coloreds.
But why? The colored people are God's children, too?
I tell you why, sir. These coloreds round here outnumber us about 16-1. We've managed to keep them in their place so far, and we intend to keep it that way.
Am I to understand that I am forbidden to work with the colored people?
Oh, y'all can work with them if y'all want, but if in you do, the white folks around here will have nothing to do with y'all.
It's discouraging. Our work here at Bliss's Landing has come to a standstill.
Well, the chain drive has finally been repaired. Will you move the Morning Star away from here? I mean, you really have no reason to stay, Elder White.
I hate to admit it, Captain Orton, but that seems to be true. White people no longer attend the services, and colored people are so intimidated that few of them come anymore.
Well, what will you do?
I think we'll have to stick to our guns for a while. I don't think the whites will give us any trouble.
Figure out what to do about Reverend White and his steamboat if y'all keep on with this a-yammering. Now then, it looks like old White ain't about to teach just the whites in this here county. But it don't look like he's about to be scared off, neither. Now, any of you men got any suggestions?
Yeah, I got an idea.
All right, Chris, don't say your piece.
I go down to that boat with my Winchester and hold it on that Reverend White while the rest of you boys bring the rope.
Hold on. I said shut your faces and just listen. We can't hang no preacher, Dose. Where'd you get such an idea? I don't think any of y'all mean that.
No. Do you remember them stern wheelers that would speed by my place so fast the wake could almost wash my shack away? Yeah. Well, I asked them to stop in a real nice way, but they only laughed at me. Y'all remember what I did then?
No, I don't.
Well, I grabbed my old Winchester and I took pot shots at the wheelhouses as they went by. Yeah, I didn't hit nobody, but after that, they took me serious.
Well, I should think they would.
So that old Reverend White better take me serious, too. And when I say I'll help lynch that old Yankee preacher, I really mean it.
More than a few white people around Bliss's Landing agreed with Chris Dose. And the only reason a hanging party didn't visit the Morning Star was because cooler heads prevailed. But still, our group was persona non grata, among both the whites and the coloreds. Now, at the urging of some of the brethren, we purchased a farm with the idea it would provide profitable employment for church members. However, by mid-March, we faced a dangerous situation. I had taken the Star downriver to Vicksburg to wait there for Emma, who was to arrive from Colorado. As we waited, ominous news reached us. The spring flood was coming, and due to the heavy rains and snow melt in the north, a virtual wall of water was rushing down the Mississippi towards us.
We'll have a rough time getting through this flood, Elder White. They say the Mississippi torrent is back 30 miles up the Yazoo River. That's about where that farm you bought is located.
We've got to reach the farm before it is flooded. We must strive to save what we can.
I wouldn't worry about it. The farm is on high ground. They told you when you bought it that it never overflowed during flood time.
I know that is what I was told, but if the levee gives way at Greenville, all the land along the Yazoo will be under 10 feet of water. Oh, can you get a little more speed out of the Star, Captain Orton?
Elder, I've got her up to a full head of steam now. Can't go any faster against this current. But we should dock at your farm's landing at 2 o'clock this afternoon.
The water is rising about 6 inches every hour. I'm beginning to be worried.
That's not enough to cover the farm, Brother Holliday. The potatoes and the strawberry crop will be safe.
Well, I'm taking no chances. I'm having some of the men build a platform up in that big oak tree. When it is finished, we'll haul our wagon and farm equipment up there for safekeeping.
We should stack all our cordwood up there, too. Dry wood for the Morning Star's boiler will be impossible to find after the water goes down.
That's a good idea, Brother Halliday. Good. It looks as if the platform's finished. Let's get to work. There's a lot to do.
A few days later, the big levee at Greenville let go and the water rose 7 feet in one night, covering our precious vegetable and strawberry crops.
But there were more disastrous problems all around us. Most farmers lost their whole year's income in that one horrible day. Farm animals drowned and houses were washed from their foundations and swept down the raging river. We, on the Morning Star, were safe enough, but we felt it our duty to help. We fitted the bow of the boat with a wooden square face, and this was to be attached to a long, flat barge. We then steamed from place to place, picking up families along with their animals, mules, horses, hogs, cows, and even chickens, and hauled them up to the high bluffs at Vicksburg. One plantation owner thought his land was safe from the rising flood, found the muddy water lapping at his front door. Terrified, he called for the Morning Star.
This is a very dangerous situation, Overwright. With the square head and barge attached to the bow of the boat, we're about 160 feet long. And still, we must maneuver through that pecan grove to reach the plantation. I put a man on the front of the barge to take soundings, but I'm afraid we'll run aground. How deep are we up there, Parker?
Park one, Captain. Get in the shadow.
We've only got 6 feet of water under us right now, and God only knows how many sunken branches and snags there are that could rip a hole in our bottom. Back off! One third, Mr. Close!
You only got 4 feet of water, Captain. Reverse your engines, or you'll run aground.
Shut her down, Mr. Close! Ahoy there in the bow! Are we running aground?
No, sir. You got 3 feet under you.
All right. We'll float her in. Keep me posted.
2 feet of water. All right, Captain Morton. The front of the barge is hitting dirt, but we will not be stuck. The wheel will back us off.
Oh. Well done, Captain Orton. Here comes the farmer driving his stock. Hey, mister, drive them up the gangway at the front of the barge.
Hee-haw! Get up there!
Contrary old mule.
There. All my animals is aboard. I don't know how to thank you, gents. My tenant farmers will be along in just a little bit with their animals. Can we wait for them?
We can try. But with this heavy wind coming up, I don't know how long we can hold this position.
This is slow and dangerous work, Elder Wright. Sending the skiff out to the sharecroppers and bringing their animals to the barge one by one. I'm not sure how long I can hold the Morning Star in this position with this strong wind and current.
I know it is dangerous, Captain. After we load all the beasts, we still have to make our way through that pecan grove, and night is coming on. Good. The last cow's aboard. We can finally leave.
Reverend, one of my sharecroppers ain't showed up yet. Can we wait just a little while more?
I'm sorry, sir. We can't wait. I'll put my boat in great danger trying to sail through those pecan trees in the dark. We must leave now.
Oh, look! There he is now. See? Off to the raft. The two men on the raft with the mule swimming behind. Come on, George, hurry it up. Pull that raft a little faster. Now, come on!
The tardy men and mules were finally aboard the barge, and heavily overloaded, we made our careful way through the pecan grove and out into Broad River, headed for Vicksburg. All along the way, rooftops of houses floated with the rushing current, sometimes with despondent people sitting on them. Uprooted trees swirled downstream, making passage extremely perilous. We reached Vicksburg just after sunset. The city was filled with refugees. With housing impossible to find, the Southern Missionary Society opened their little church to the desperate people. After several days, the government sent tents and some food. But in our case, some good news came from the calamity. The attitude of the people around Bliss's Landing changed in our favor when they remembered the help rendered by the Morning Star and the Seventh-day Adventists.